Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 12th, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a very big recap from our first Zoom happy hour, which was simply a blast. So expect more of those in the future. Also, with cases going up, we revisit what it means to be symptomatic and what you should do if you have COVID-19. And the governor is opening up more businesses as cases continue to skyrocket. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1-minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and a message about what's going on in your world. If you're going back to work, if you're working on the front line still, we want to know what's going on in your world at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing and uncontained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 593 deaths, and currently there are 17,170 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 12th at 4 p.m. And we've been breaking records almost daily this week. And on Friday, a new daily high of 770 cases was announced. Now some more news. We will surpass 3,000 weekly cases on Saturday. Barring a large jump on Saturday, the weekly death rate is substantially down. The average weekly death rate of the past 9 weeks has been around 57. For this week, as of Friday, we've lost 24 South Carolinians. We're at a 73% statewide hospital bed utilization rate. So of the 7,614 inpatient beds currently used, 512 are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. So death rates and hospitalizations are holding somewhat steady, cases are skyrocketing, and our percent positive rate has remained in the teens this week. It's currently now at 14.4%. And one last thing, Greenville County saw its third day in a row of triple-digit new cases on Friday. Governor Henry McMaster said this week that he would not be closing any parts of the economy again due to the skyrocketing case numbers in the state. Instead, on Friday, he reopened bowling alleys and lifted occupancy restrictions on retail establishments. He said in a statement, quote, South Carolinians know what they can do to keep themselves and their loved ones safe, and it's incumbent upon each and every one of us to follow the advice and recommendations of the public health experts. McMaster also issued a new 15-day state of emergency order. Earlier this week, the governor released his plans for the $1.9 billion in CARES Act money coming to the state. Now, this money can only be used to reimburse the state, agencies, and hospitals for COVID-19 costs incurred. In a letter to lawmakers, McMaster designated a huge chunk, $500 million, to replenish the state unemployment insurance trust fund. That fund is financed by business taxes and was more than full before the start of the pandemic. $225 million will also go toward reimbursing state agencies, local governments, first responders, hospitals, and institutions of higher education. $215 million will be to reimburse those public school districts who provide additional days of classroom instruction before the scheduled start of the school year, or if they expand hours of operation. Other money in the plan, which the legislature will need to approve, is similar to the recommendations of Accelerate SC, including a broadband expansion plan. Okay, so that was some of the top COVID-19 political news of the past few days. So, let's get into our happy hour. Now, we know not everyone can make it to our first Zoom happy hour. Towner McGill. He had like two other happy hours going on. So, we wanted to bring part of the discussion about the Tuesday primary to you, dear listener. So, here is a recap of several top races by the Post and Courier's Kalen Bird, the Associated Press's Meg Kinnard, Jamie Lovegrove of the PNC, and the state's Mayon Schechter. yeah, this was a good old throwback time, friends. And we were just kicking it into high gear, and even with some early hiccups, I have to say it was a resounding success. That's not just me, I'm sure. I mean, everyone said so. Trust me. So give it a listen, and know that we'll have more of these in the future, so you did not miss out, and we hope to see more interaction from y'all in the future. Here you go.
So I'm going to start with Kalen Bird, the Post and Courier, who covered the first congressional race down there in the Low Country. I was down there with her. We were waiting outside in Shem Creek. We got nice and sweaty. We probably have COVID now because no one had a mask on except us. So Kayla, just kind of tell us, A, what you're drinking, and B, what we saw happen, and the importance of that race down there in Charleston.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. So first off, the most important question, what am I drinking? I'm drinking seltzer called Press. This is the lime, yes, lemongrass flavor. And I do have another one queued up that's a blackberry hibiscus, uh-huh, just in case it's a two-drink kind of a night.
Oh, it will be.
Oh, it already is. Yeah.
I got mine ready too.
So outside of the fun things of drinking, there's the equally and maybe even more fun things of politics. The first congressional district race, I feel like, has... It started, you know, the 2020 race started as soon as the 2018 race ended, and the fight was on almost immediately. Republicans started trying to figure out how they could win that seat back. They thought they would never lose it. It had been solidly red for about 40 years when Joe Cunningham won narrowly in 2018, defeating Katie Arrington after she dramatically defeated Mark Sanford in the GOP primary in 18. So that whole cycle was dramatic, and now we're starting on kind of the next wave of that roller coaster as it's starting to creak up. And what happened was the big question that was really looming for this primary was whether or not it was going to head to a runoff. It was very clear, especially in the last couple of weeks, that State Representative Nancy Mace was doing very well, and Kathy Landing was definitely trying to give her a run for her money. So we knew it was already emerging as a two-woman race out of the four-person contest. Bikers for Trump founder Chris Cox was also in the running, as well as Bluffton Housing Administrator Brad Mole. And then primary night came, and that was the big question. Is it going to go to a runoff? And then if it does, what is that going to mean for the Republicans as they move forward and try to unify behind their eventual nominee? Would those 2 weeks between the primary and a runoff really make things kind of stressful and even more dramatic and get kind of ugly? And we don't have to do that now because Nancy Mace won easily. She won 57% of the vote. Very much coasting through that primary that we weren't even sure how that was going to go. People ask me all the time, like, oh, of course you know how it's going to go. And I'm like, no, we don't. We don't. We have really strong.
Really, and you can't guess it either. Yeah.
You can't guess.
So it was a shocker that night.
It was one of those things where after I talked with a couple of different voters at various precincts, especially in the Mount Pleasant area, I started to kind of get a hunch that that might be what happened, but the only real deciders are really at the ballot box. But she won very well, not only 57%, but she, for another context point, she won all but 9 of the 369 precincts in the district, spanning 5 counties. So she didn't just win, she really dominated. And so now, almost as soon as that primary is over, it feels like we're really starting to kick it into high gear for the general election. So buckle your seatbelts. That's kind of the
quick. Yeah, well... Hey, thanks for the overview, Kaylin. And from one kind of somewhat unpredictable race to a predictable race, Meg Kinnard. We're talking about Sarah Lindsey Graham's race there. And I know AP, Vocast, you didn't call races, or you weren't calling them as early as usual. You weren't focused on that race. But we easily could have called that race at 7:01 p.m., but we waited a little bit longer. Lindsey Graham just blowing it out there for his nomination there.
We had talked about how we figured there'd be a 7:01 call. I think that even if there wasn't technically one, those of us who predicted that he would run away with it were obviously right and could have pretty much made that call ourselves. But yeah, Lindsey Graham, he ran against three very little known Republican candidates, none of them ever really able to get in a lot of attention, certainly not to raise a lot of money. And, you know, we've talked about this a bunch of times on the pod and on Twisk as well, but you know, Lindsey Graham has had this undulating relationship with Donald Trump. And when he's up, it's usually because he's got a good relationship with the president at the moment. And that's the case right now. So I think that going into this primary, we knew that Lindsey Graham had a lot of support in South Carolina. He certainly has had a lot of money. This general election campaign has basically been going on for a year. I mean, I was doing some research and kind of looking back through my old stories before Tuesday night. Jamie Harrison announced a really long time ago And started getting national level money and support ever since. And so it's basically been, you know, off to the races since then. Now it's just official. Now Lindsey Graham is officially the Republican nominee. So they can just keep doing, he and Jamie Harrison can basically keep doing what they've been doing in terms of running against each other into November. I didn't start it off, but I'm drinking Prosecco because this is me, so let's just go.
Another predictable move, but a very fitting and on brand.
Right, with the theme. So yeah, you know, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing in terms of covering the Graham-Harrison race. It's going to be really expensive. Who knows where it's going to end up. I think Harrison originally told me he thought it would take $10 million to win this race. He's got more than, he's raised more than 15. Lindsey Graham has raised more than 21. That's a heck of a lot of money in South Carolina. Not that it all comes from here. But for a race here, that's a really big number, and it's going to be one to watch for sure.
Yeah, and we saw that headline, you know, right after too, saying four debates. Jamie Harrison wants four debates. I'm sure Lindsey Graham will take one of those debates, and I'm pretty sure ETV and the Posting Courier will be partnered together on them. But we'll do what they want to do four, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be one, so we'll stay tuned for that. Some news coming for you this fall, for all that action, socially distanced debates, which, you know, by their nature are pretty much distanced, except, you know, during the Democratic primary, remember when, like, everyone crammed on the stage? Just like an old Fish Fry video.
Oh my God, different times. Fun times.
Now, Jamie Lovegrove, what, first you unmute yourself, tell me what barbecue stop are you at right now? Where's your background and what are you drinking? Just fill the people in, let them know where you are.
My background is, of course, the legendary Scott's Barbecue in Hemingway.
Ooh, we were there together. Remember that, Meg?
Indeed. Such fun.
Kamala Harris stop.
Kamala Harris trail, I believe. Yep.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not actually there right now as much as I wish I was.
But what?
I know.
Next step.
Terrible. What?
We'll make a little run out there this weekend. It'll be good. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking Maker's Mark.
Here we go. Brown liquor.
And yeah, in terms of the Graham race, is that what you want me to talk about?
I kind of threw you and my on. I just kind of said, tell me what, like, you know, some of their state house races that you were watching that kind of stood out to you.
Right. So obviously, the vast majority of state house incumbents didn't face any opposition at all. A total of two of them, of 170 members, two of them lost. one was Kit Spires out in Pelion, lost to Ryan McCabe. Who was the second one?
Jimmy Bales.
It was Jimmy Bales, of course. That was
Jimmy Bales for 500.
Mayan's like indignant that you didn't remember Jimmy Bales.
I don't know how I remember Kit Spires, not Jimmy Bales. Jimmy Bales.
Mayan is just like, what's happening here?
Was always in big trouble. He has been representing that seat for more than two decades. Was on Richland County Council before that. You know, it was kind of an institution in that district, but he is elderly.
Up there in age, yes.
Jermaine Johnson was running as kind of being a fresh face. It's a heavily African-American district that will now be represented by an African-American man. You know, he also worked for Andrew Yang, another primary campaign throwback, the Yang Gang, who endorsed him and gave him some money. So, you know, that was kind of a blowout. I'd say the couple actual big headlines on the night were A, that Jonathan Hill won his primary despite his own party campaigning actively against him. He took them to court. He lost. That'll be nice and awkward on June 24th when we get back into session. To see his first interactions with Gary Simrell, the House Majority Leader, who actively campaigned against him. He is, of course, for anyone who does not know, and I imagine most of the folks on this call do, he is a contrarian who votes no on just about everything, has been a real thorn in the side of leadership for many years. But, you know, apparently that's what his district in the upstate wants, and he won fairly comfortably in the end. I'd say the other big headline of the day was that Luke Rankin, the Senate Judiciary Chairman, was forced into a runoff in his Republican primary out in Horry County. He lives in the Conway area. That county includes some parts of the coast as well in the Myrtle Beach area. He only got 40% in a three-way primary.
Yeah.
You know, that was the most, but anytime an incumbent can only get 40% 40% in their primary. I mean, 60%
of. Well, yeah, and he's been there for so long too, and it's starting to rattle some cages there.
Yeah.
I want to throw it to Maya too and see if she saw anything that stood out to her. Maybe even talk about how wonderful Richland County can run an election. Seems to be something that they're. tell us what you're drinking, Maya. Just the glass this time.
First of all, I would like everybody to imagine a background of a yacht, because that's what I tried. My background, it did not work, but I just want everyone to imagine I'm at sea right now.
Just tell me about, we can talk Richland County elections. I was down in Charleston County and saw huge lines too, and they had them up here in Richland too. So just the kerfuffle that's been prevalent for those guys.
Right. Real quick, $9.99 Target wine. Just putting it out there.
Get it while you can. It's white. It's as far as I can tell. I don't know if there's a name for it. It's just white.
Pinot Grigio.
Oh,
the collection is what it is called. The collection. Yeah. So, I mean, Jamie stole a little bit of what I was, a little bit of the thunder that I was paying attention to. It's fine. The Jimmy Bales race between Jermaine Johnson was obviously a big deal for the state newspaper. Big deal in the Midlands. First time in 22 years, we're going to have a new face that's going to represent that county. And not only a new face, and not only is it a complete, and as Jamie noted before on Twitter, a change of the guard. This also means that there's an open slot on the very influential House Ways and Means Committee. So I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of, news about that, people trying to leverage themselves to get there. Richland County elections, Richland County going to Richland County. Why break up the street? We saw long lines. There were instances where certain races, including the House District 80 race between Jimmy Bales and Jermaine Johnson, was left off the ballot. We also heard that the Midlands race between Heather Bauer and Rhodes Bailey was left off the ballot. And if you talk to lawmakers, they'll tell you stories about Spring Valley High School, where people were standing in line for 3 to 4 hours just to count. Or just to cast a ballot. And part of that problem, obviously, if we go back, is the fact that COVID-19 has really reshaped these elections. You have many poll workers, hundreds of poll workers across the state, but especially in Richland County, who decided not to be poll workers or poll managers this year because they felt at risk of catching COVID-19. And as you'll recall, many poll workers are of that vulnerable 65 years and older age range. So there was that issue. Because of that issue, you also had many precincts consolidate. There are also precincts that, traditional historical precincts, schools, churches, et cetera, that didn't want to be a host to polling stations this year because out of fear for COVID-19. So you had a lot of precincts consolidate, and that created a lot of headaches across the county. Remember also, this is a brand new commission. We also have an interim Richland County elections director. So you pull that all together, and you had what you had on Tuesday. Obviously, what we saw in the last few, yesterday, I think, today. Yeah, well, 2 days ago.
What day is it?
Exactly.
Yesterday was Wednesday. Wednesday. We saw that the state election commission is stepping in to help out with the runoff, which is something that we understand that a lot of lawmakers were requesting that the State Election Commission do help out. But what happens really, think about the runoff though. There are not that many races in the runoff, and the runoff usually has much lower turnout than what we see in even the primary or even November. So the big question is what happens in November.
So
far, July 1st is when the expansion of absentee voting expires and sunsets. So does the legislature decide to expand that again? We'll have to see. But obviously, one would hope that Richland County has its act together by November when thousands more voters turn out to the polls to vote because it's a presidential race.
Yeah, that was the thing, too, because you asked the governor the other day, too, at the press conference if he was going to expand absentee voting, if he wanted to see it expand, and he's like, oh, we'll wait till November. I mean, we expanded it a month before this, and, there was talk about not getting the messaging out to enough people. I even talked to a voter. I said, well, why didn't you vote absentee? And she was like, well, it seemed a little complicated. I mean, I know it's not that complicated a process, but if you're not used to it, it seems very odd and like cumbersome. And with everyone else doing it, it's not like you have the easy access to call up the elections commission and be like, am I doing this right? And do your ballot.
And I think part of the problem too was that the legislature did not really expand absentee voting that long ago. So especially mm-hmm. if you're not someone that's on Twitter, you know, picking up a newspaper, watching news on TV, you didn't know.
Listening to the podcast, you know, et cetera.
Listening to the podcast.
I plugged my own pod in this happy hour.
Didn't know.
Wow, what a great discussion. And thanks again to our guests. It's been so long since we got to hear from you guys. And of course, all the leaders who were able to join us. Next time, we'll have even more interaction and hopefully more time. But it was great putting names with faces and seeing some pretty stellar backgrounds, which I was featured in a few. And we're going to have to find a way to get y'all some pint glasses for the next meetup, so stay tuned. So just so you know, we're moving the business section from this podcast episode to next week. So our interview with USC research economist Dr. Joey Von Nessen will be on Tuesday's pod. And this is just to accommodate that big political discussion we just had. But before we go into some medical news, I wanted you to know that our unemployment insurance claim numbers ticked up for the first time in 7 weeks, the week ending June 6. That was also the week in which we saw our highest COVID-19 case numbers ever. Leading the unemployment insurance claims were restaurant layoffs, as restaurants continue to struggle amid reopening with infected employees and supply chain issues. I mean, just as an example, even my favorite local bar here in Columbia, Rockaways, is taking a week off next week to regroup. These are the economic tremors we will continue to feel for the foreseeable future as our economy and state deals with COVID-19. State epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell gives us an overview of the current situation that has her the most concerned since the beginning of the pandemic, which, if you remember just how terrifying March was and the unknown that we faced, it's a pretty stark warning to hear.
What we're seeing is a sort of slightly ongoing upward trend. And so there are lots of activities going on now. There are not only the protests, but there are behaviors in lots of communities where people do not appear to be paying attention to, in all sorts of gatherings, paying attention to social distancing. And it's not just one or the other. It's not just a mask or 6 feet. It should be a mask and 6 feet. So, you know, we ask people to keep that in mind. There are many ways that people can participate in gatherings more safely than is happening now, but it should be both the mask and attempt to keep a distance from other people.
Okay, so let's do a little medical hypothetical here. Let's say you finally decided that you are going to go out for the weekend. You hit up a restaurant, a bar or two, maybe you go boating with some friends the next day. Then, of course, brunch on Sunday because it's been forever. Which turned into Sunday fun day at a friend's house, etc. You say you socially distanced during all this, but did you? You had a mask on, sometimes, but who can really say? You're on a boat. I mean, are there rules on a boat? Yes, there are. Anyway, you wake up Monday and you feel just horrible. Not just hangover bad, but worse, like flu-like. Then you develop a dry cough, and you realize you probably have COVID-19. So what do? First, get tested at one of the free testing sites you can find at acceleratesc.gov. There's so many resources there, accelerate.sc.gov. Then quarantine yourself. No more boat parties, baby. Stay home. You have some sort of sickness, so don't spread it. Common sense. But what about all those people you hung out with? Are they infected? You only started feeling bad on Monday, so should I tell them? Should they get tested? ? Dr. Linda Bell explains.
There is evidence that transmission occurs from people who are asymptomatic. And for this reason, we actually extended the time period that we consider contacts. We initially said that you're a contact if you've had close face-to-face contact with someone from the time of onset of symptoms while they were still symptomatic. And now we consider a contact as someone who's had close contact with someone in the 2 days prior to the onset of symptoms, because we recognize that some people who do not have symptoms can spread the virus.
Masks and distancing help prevent the spread of COVID-19, and so does washing your hands. So continue to do those things like you were in March and April when you were terrified. Or as Governor Henry McMaster says, be smart.
Be smart. There's a lot of stupid floating around out there, here and there. There's a lot of reckless, careless activity. We ask everybody to be very careful. And the vaccine is not here yet. We don't know when it's going to be here. But it is, it's disappointing to go to places and see people all jammed up in crowds, celebrating the beautiful weather, celebrating being in South Carolina, but at the same time exposing themselves and possibly others to these risks. And the ultimate price for this lack of care is death.
And again, it's people not being smart that are driving these case numbers. A lot of people held for the economy to reopen, but are they following the protocols to keep others safe and therefore keep the economy strong? Those unemployment claim numbers ticked up the same week we saw our highest weekly case numbers. So if those same people who wanted to see the economy reopened ASAP aren't following these simple health guidelines like wearing a mask and social distancing, they are actually jeopardizing that same economy. DHEC also announced that it has been including antibody test numbers in its daily testing numbers, but doing so has not affected the number of cases in the state. However, DHEC says it has slightly decreased the percent positive rate. Just for an example, as of June 10th, a total of 265,351 tests for COVID-19, including 27,609 antibody tests, have been reported in the state. DHEC said it is committed to providing accurate and transparent data and will begin providing the specific breakdown of the number of antibody tests performed by private labs. Hey there, hotshot pop quiz! Remember way back, a month ago, when Dr. Anthony Fauci told Senator Tim Scott that South Carolina should be cloned as a model for other states to follow in reopening? Time flies. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Were you part of our happy hour the other night? Did you have fun? Did you miss us? Are you on vacation right now? Do you like me? Yes or no? Tell us, 803-563-7169. This is our normal, and we're all here together. So let us know what's going on. Leave us your name, a message, and where you're calling from at 803-563-7169. You might just get on the pod. So that being said, AT, do we have any new voicemails?
We do. We have one new voicemail. It is another returning caller.
Ooh. All right, let's
roll tape.
Roll tape.
Roll tape.
Roll tape. Is the tape rolling?
Hey, guys. It is Joe in West Columbia, who happens to be the guy that called a few weeks back while I was working in the garden. Just an update. As far as the nameless grocery store that I work for, there has been a very big increase in people wearing their masks in such a small space, which is a great thing to see. We love to see it. And people are being quite thankful still, but people are also just being nice to each other and very, very understanding of the situation at hand, which is great. But in recent light of all the jumping numbers going on, wanted to encourage everyone to let people know to wear a mask wherever you are, whether or not you are in a grocery store or in Lowe's, which I hardly ever see anybody wearing a mask in Lowe's outside of people that work there. Or even just people, you know, when you're going out with your friends and you're going to be in close contact with lots of people that you're not always in close contact with. You should always wear a mask. And even if you are out in the streets supporting Black Lives, you should be wearing a mask. Anyways, just my encouragement, just my thoughts. Hope you're all having a great day. And enjoy the sunshine while you still can.
Thanks again, Joe. Oh my gosh, wait a minute. I forgot that you don't like to be thanked. But I think that was you don't want to be thanked for your frontline service at said nameless grocery store. But we're going to thank you anyway. And also glad to hear about your mask usage. Glad to hear people are being nice again. You love to hear that. And again, we heard that directly from a frontline worker, folks, to wear a mask. And I also went to Lowe's too. He mentioned how people weren't wearing masks at Lowe's, and I saw similar trends there because I got more plants, actual plants. Mm-hmm. Got a couple pots. I even used
some yogurt containers.
You don't really need to buy a You don't need to buy a fancy pot to cultivate such beautiful life. At you can use just everyday household objects you have laying around. If you
any detritus will
do. And if you're a hoarder, you have plenty of stuff laying around like myself. So I took one of those yogurt containers, one of the big ones from Costco, and just spray painted it because they have some spray paint laying around. just everyday household things.
What are you talking about?
And I made
a
pot.
In your house?
I made a pot. Everything's in my house. I can open a drawer right now. Spray paint yogurt container. Boom.
boom. Bam. Boom.
So because I split up a big plant and I put it on our Insta story, but just these plants need some more space. So I got them some more space, and they love
and
the
you
sun.
You have a direct question for our green thumb.
Oh yeah,
listeners,
we need our
horticulturalist
Brenton Fox. If you're listening, which I know you are, I have an onion that was part of the original 10 pounds of onions I got at Costco, and I kind of like neglected it for a while, and it started sprouting again, like really sprouting. It's alive. It looks like an alien on my countertop there. And I'm wondering if I should just plant that bad boy in the ground and see what sprouts up. So I might watch some YouTube videos, might do it myself, but would love to know from Brenton Fox, our lead horticulturalist, about what I should do with this sprouting onion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who else we could possibly turn to.
I don't think the internet would have the answer we need.
Well, we don't have the patience to sit through a 6-minute YouTube video. So Brenton, please do the work for us.
Please come claim my onion for me.
Yes.
Also have some other adult good news, which
adult good news.
It's an old adult good news. Getting new bath towels. I have decent towels. They're kind of thin. They're not like worn, but they're just, I've had them for a few years, 5 or so years. Mm-hmm. And I was at Costco again. This is somewhat sponsored by Costco here. And they had them on sale, some big, thick, fluffy towels. I was like, oh, I don't need them, but they're on sale. Like, they're $7. Why not get some new towels? Treat myself, right?
And then I'm like, treat yourself.
I live alone. I have no one else. So how many towels does a single person need? So I got
Gavin
two.
Lives alone. He hoards yogurt containers. He spray paints things, huffs the fumes. He lives a very sad lifestyle.
Don't talk to my plants like that.
Do you want to know? You want to know a towel pro tip?
Please give me some ratios I can use.
It's you need. You don't get bath towels. You get bath sheets, bro.
Oh, wow.
As a larger man, I'm 6'3", so I need a bath. I need a bath sheet.
Big inside, big and tall.
I need more real estate.
Well, I'm
to
a petite
wick that
6'1", 6'1", so the 2 inches, yeah.
See, but I'm all the way up here at 6'3". He's all the way down there at 6'1". Yes. So,
I mean, it's a world of difference. But I will
he's a pipsqueak.
When you get those new towels, I mean, you just wonder where you've been using before.
That's real adult good news. Yeah. That's right.
So, got some new shampoo too. Okay, yeah, I'm getting the hug here. Tell us your adult good news. Tell us some situations in your life. What kind of plants you're growing? What kind of upcycling you're doing at home? Maybe some things that you've accomplished during this lockdown, which we're still in, even though things are open, it's still pretty dangerous out there. So let us know what's going on, 803-563-7169. And thank you again for tuning into the pod and everyone that tuned in to our lead happy hour. We thank you so much. And again, we'll have more of those in the future. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for the latest. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. There's so much news out there going on right now, and they're out there keeping you informed every day of the week. Also, we are here for you, our lead community, throughout this week. And as the situation continues to develop, 3 days a week, we are here. And we are in full-scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. I'm against the becoming. I am the becoming. I am death.
I am the destroyer of worlds.
I am
the
destroyer.
The Omega.